This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News Tonight.
I told President Zelensky that this supply should be prioritized to the African continent, taking into consideration the fragility and the economic and social situations in many countries.
That was Ivory Coast leader Alassane Ouattara, who met with South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa over the weekend, with the looming end of Ukrainian grain blockade as a major discussion point. Details coming up. Also, 34 passengers die in a bus accident in Kenya. This story and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Tunisians are voting today on a new constitution promoted by President Kais Saied, who has been accused of working to give his office nearly unchecked powers that critics say could lead to an autocracy in the birthplace of the Arab Spring. According to the French news agency AFP, some 9.3 million out of Tunisia's 12 million people are eligible to vote. No minimum participation has been set for the constitution to pass, nor any provision made for a no result. And Saïd's critics have warned Tunisia risks sliding back towards dictatorship. The new text would place the head of the state in command of the army, allow him to appoint a government without parliamentary approval, and make him virtually impossible to remove from office. Kais Saied, a 64-year-old law professor, won the 2019 presidential election in a landslide, building on his image as incorruptible and distanced from the political elite. He has vowed to protect Tunisians' liberties and describes his political project as a correction and a return to the path of the revolution. But while Saïd enjoys some popularity, that is being tested by soaring inflation, youth unemployment of 40%, and a tough loan deal with the International Monetary Fund. Results of the referendum are expected late Tuesday or early Wednesday. Kenyan local reports say 34 passengers died after a bus swerved off a bridge and fell 40 meters into a valley. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The bus belonging to the Modern Coast Company was traveling from the central town of Meru to the coastal city of Mombasa. Rescue efforts resumed Monday morning and rescuers recovered more bodies and survivors after the Sunday evening accident. Some of the injured are receiving treatment in nearby hospitals. The Daily Nation reports an initial investigation showed that the bus's brakes might have failed. Witnesses say the bus driver had lost control of the vehicle before it fell into the river. Reuters report that Kenya's transport regulator has ordered all buses belonging to Modern Coast to suspend operations pending an investigation into the crash. Kenya's National Transport and Safety Authority data shows 1,968 people died in road accidents in the first 6 months of 2022, compared to 1,800 in the same period last year. The National Bureau of Statistics says 4,579 people died in traffic accidents last year in Kenya, up from 3,478 in 2020. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
French President Emmanuel Macron begins his first ever visit to Cameroon today as part of a three-country West Africa tour that will include Benin and Guinea-Bissau. Analysts say Macron will discuss security and economic concerns amid an upsurge in conflict and terrorism, as well as rising prices and fuel and food shortages caused in part by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Bulldozers raise makeshift market stalls and buildings Monday morning in Tongolo, a neighborhood in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé. Among the several hundred stall owners is Julio Evina. Evina says it is regrettable that officials are destroying businesses along some major streets in the capital Yaoundé and rendering families hungry simply because French President Emmanuel Macron will be visiting Cameroon. He says if not for Macron's visit, he is certain that the government would not have filled potholes that have been causing accidents on the roads in Yaoundé. France says Macron will discuss the food crisis in Africa, provoked in part by Russia's war in Ukraine, as well as the challenges in increasing agriculture production in Africa and an upsurge in insecurity. Cameroon faces Boko Haram terrorism that has killed over 30,000 people and displaced 2 million within 10 years in its northern border with Chad and Nigeria. The Central African state also faces separatist conflicts that have killed at least 3,300 people and displaced more than 750,000 in 5 years, according to the UN. Capo Daniel is the Deputy Defense Chief of the Ambazonia Defense Forces, or the ADF, one of the separatist groups. He says the ADF hopes Macron will ask Biya to end the use of force as a solution to the separatist crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking regions.
One of our factions in our liberation movement called for lockdown as a means to protest Emmanuel Macron's visit, but other movements will be watching these events with the hope that Emmanuel Macron will be pushing Paul Biya to choose the path of peaceful resolution of the war.
Politicians and civil society groups say they will discuss with Macron the possibility of a peaceful transition in Cameroon. 89-year-old President Paul Biya has been in power for close to 40 years, and critics accuse him of rigging elections to prolong his power until he dies. The government says he has always won democratic elections. France says after Cameroon, Macron will visit Benin and Guinea-Bissau. Ejani Leonard Kulu is a political scientist and an analyst at the UN-sponsored University for Peace Africa program in Addis Ababa. He says Macron is expected to review his country's economic, political and security ties with Africa. Kulu says African countries that have agreements with France are now seeking profitable partnerships with other world economies.
We saw the president of the African Union and the African Commission going to Russia to see how Syrians will not be blocked for Africa to have food. If we take the case of Cameroon signing a defense treaty with Russia, Cameroon surrendering mines exploitations to China, question France positioning and even giving a sentiment of anti-French. So France wants to reposition themselves against other partners like China, like Russia.
The government of France says Macron is accompanied by the French ministers of foreign affairs, armed forces and foreign relations, as well as the French Secretary of State for Development. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Sergei Lavrov today became the first Russian foreign minister to visit the Republic of Congo, where he blamed Western forces for Africa's food crisis. The West has insisted that Russia's blockade of Ukrainian ports has caused widespread shortages of wheat and other staples, along with skyrocketing prices. An agreement signed Friday commits Russia to not target facilities involved in Ukraine's food exports. Lavrov arrived from Egypt on a four-nation African trip that also includes stops in Uganda and Ethiopia. He said he had frank discussions in Brazzaville with Jean-Claude Ngosso, the Congolese Minister of Foreign Affairs, that focused on how the two countries can avoid obstacles created by Westerners for bilateral cooperation. Ngakoso says the Congo did not want to howl with the wolves and throw oil on the fire. With friendship and respect, he affirmed that the Congo suggested to two parties to find ways and means to have a negotiated solution to the Ukrainian crisis. Lavrov's Cairo stop centered on major issues facing Russia and Egypt on both the economic and political fronts. Both countries do between $4 to $5 billion in annual trade, and the Ukraine conflict and COVID-19 have caused disruptions to tourism, grain sales, and energy exports. Egyptian political sociologist Said Sadiq tells VOA that he thinks that visits this past week by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to France and Germany may have been part of an effort to mediate a diplomatic solution between Russia and Ukraine. Lavrov noted that he had discussed putting a speedy end to the Ukraine conflict with Sisi. Egypt's Daba nuclear plant, on which Russia recently began construction, was also reportedly a major topic of discussion. Russia's Rosatom is building the plant. Lavrov is also expected to visit Ethiopia, where Egypt is hoping that he raises the subject of the controversial Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. The World Health Organization has declared monkeypox a global health emergency. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus made the declaration on Saturday, despite differing views among experts serving on the UN Health Agency's Emergency Committee. It was the first time the chief of WHO has taken such an action. Tedros said the risk of monkeypox was moderate in all world regions, except in Europe, where the risk was high according to WHO's assessment. In the United States, more than 2,800 cases have been reported since the outbreak emerged 2 months ago. According to health officials, about 99% of them have been men who reported to have having sex with other men. A global emergency is WHO's highest level of alert, but it does not necessarily mean a disease is particularly transmissible or deadly. Dr. Michael Ryan, WHO's emergencies chief, said that Tedros made the decision about monkeypox to ensure serious attention is paid to the current outbreak. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. African leaders and regional economic blocs immediately welcomed Friday's deal between Russia and Ukraine aimed at unblocking grain exports from Black Sea ports. The Eastern European countries account for much of the global grain supply, especially wheat, and many African nations are heavily dependent on those food imports. The World Food Program hopes ending the bottlenecks caused by the war will alleviate extreme hunger endured by millions of Africans, but experts warn the path forward remains tough. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa and Ivory Coast leader Alassane Ouattara met in Pretoria this weekend, and the hopefully looming end of the grain blockade was a major discussion point. Ramaphosa described Africa's continued reliance on massive amounts of grain from Eastern Europe as a risk and a real danger to the continent's 1.3 billion people. Ouattara told reporters he'd spoken with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky last week.
I told President Zelensky that this supply should be prioritized to the African continent, taking into consideration the fragility and the economic and social situations in many countries.
Economists hope the resumption of grain exports from Ukraine will reduce prices, which have rocketed since the conflict there started in February, and ease food shortages in Africa and the Middle East. Dr. Greg Mills heads the Brenthurst Foundation, a Johannesburg-based organization that advises African governments about poverty relief and development. He explains that Ukraine not being able to ship grain to Africa added immensely to the suffering on a continent already ravaged by the COVID-19 pandemic.
So it's absolutely critical that Ukraine can open those Black Sea ports where there's about 4.5 million tons in storage, of about 25 million tons in Ukraine overall in storage, and then a harvest waiting to move out over this next season of as much as 80 million tons. If we can get those ports open and moving, if Russia actually allows this to happen, the crisis will to some extent be averted.
Averted, says Mills, but only temporarily, because Africa had a food security crisis long before Russia invaded Ukraine.
The principal drivers of food insecurity are low yields in Africa, and that's a factor, of course, related to fertilizer usage, related to mechanization, and in the African instance, given the absence of mechanization across much of the continent, it relates to the drought and the ongoing drought, particularly in parts of Eastern Africa.
He explains that Ukraine's an especially big supplier of grain to North Africa, East Africa, and the Horn of Africa. He says Ethiopia, for example, has suffered a lot because grain hasn't been flowing in from Ukraine.
Then Ukraine supplies an extraordinary 1/2 of the world export market in vegetable oil. And this is why you're seeing these compounding effects of droughts, of low yields in Africa, and now a cutoff in supplies compounded by high fertilizer prices and high fuel prices, which have led to, you know, considerable hardship and increasing food insecurity in parts of Africa.
Mull says resuming grain exports can't happen soon enough and will bring relief to several African regions.
Those that are suffering drought, and it's particularly those that are in situations of conflict, which make it very hard to move food around and, of course, make agricultural production that much more difficult. So especially at the moment, Somalia, about 1/2 the population of Somalia, of 15 million people, are facing food insecurity. It's big parts of Ethiopia. Of course, they have a civil war all of their own and very low yields, in part, again, because of fertilizer prices, and then bits of the Sahel.
Agricultural experts urge African leaders to learn from the grain blockade and act now to boost domestic food production and to encourage more consumption of indigenous crops. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Studies show that gun violence disproportionately affects African-American communities. VOA's Jackson Mfungane visited a shooting victim in Philadelphia.
As the wave of horrific mass shootings dominate daily news in America, the issue of gun rights and the Second Amendment continues to be part of a heated national debate. Statistics show that across the U.S., there has been an uptick in the number of victims of gun violence. The rates are especially high in urban areas, with large cities like Philadelphia setting an all-time record for homicides last year. And figures show that even though we're halfway through the year, 2022 is on pace to be the most violent in the city's recorded history. West Philadelphia, or West Philly, is what some urban experts would refer to as an inner city. It is also home to a thriving Liberian-American community. David Bonney, who we first met in 2015 in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, on my trip to cover the Ebola pandemic, moved to Philadelphia 5 years ago to continue his college education. He works part-time as an assistant manager at a local Rite Aid. And even though gun violence in his neighborhood has been featured on the local news, he was too busy with work and school to pay close attention to it. That changed in June of this year when David, walking home in the early hours of a summer morning, was confronted by a gunman a few meters from his home.
I was shot 6 times, and I got, like, multiple wounds in my leg. Some of the bullets penetrated my leg, and one of the bullets got stuck within my muscles. One of the bullets also fractured my femoral bone and also my femoral bone right here. And then one of the bullets also cut one of my veins in the back of my leg.
David says that he was lucky that none of the bullets hit him above the waist.
That's the fascinating part. I really don't understand. How did those bullets get, you know, all the way down there and not up here. But thank God it didn't hit me up on my upper range. But, you know, I'm very grateful. I'm really, really grateful that I'm alive.
Like many African immigrants, David did not think too much on the issue of gun violence. He says that he felt that that was more of an American debate.
We Africans, we really try our best to stay, you know, just stay very quiet.
Out of trouble.
And out of trouble. Because, you know, that's how we're raised. We stay out of trouble. We just work very hard, you know, take care of ourselves and our families.
Reports say that in the U.S. this year, each day on average, over 300 people are killed by gunshots in multiple forms of violence, including assaults and murders. David says that one of the lessons from this traumatic experience has been to dispel the stereotype that all young black male victims of gun violence in inner cities are always gang members or somehow connected to illegal drugs.
My hope and prayer to the world, to America, and the rest of America, I would love for you guys to understand that every young black man is not the same. You cannot put everybody in the same category, because some of us are strong young black men. We work very hard. We're intelligent people. We work very hard to build our communities, to make our communities a better place. And if something like this happened to me or other young men out there, all the victims out there, the police should take the time to investigate. The police should be able to at least be in consultation with the families of the victims.
As David hails from his auntie's house, 20 minutes away from his old neighborhood, he hopes that police will continue following up on his case and possibly catch the shooter. But with the increasing cases of shootings in the area, that is likely to be another statistic of an unsolved shooting. For Voice of America, I'm Jackson Vunganyi.
Officials from Botswana and Zimbabwe want to transfer prisoners between the two countries. Mokondisi Dube has the details.
There are more than 500 Zimbabweans incarcerated in Botswana prisons. However, there are less than 10 Botswana nationals in Zimbabwe's facilities. Botswana's Minister of Defense and Security, Kagiso Musi, told VOA they are moving closer to signing the MOU for the transfer of prisoners.
The issue is ongoing as we are two countries, kind of, we are signing agreements to ensure that we can exchange prisoners. That is ongoing, and I think the agreement will be signed very soon. I think the agreements are with the attorney generals. I am not sure on the exact dates, but maybe even before they go back to Zimbabwe. Both the commissioners might sign the agreements.
Yes. Zimbabwe's Commissioner of Prisons, Moses Chihovu, met with his Zimbabwean counterpart, Diana Marate, to conclude the process Friday. Chihovu says inmates will not be forced to transfer between countries.
What is going to happen is that we are going to get the consent of the inmate, whether he or she likes to serve the sentence in Zimbabwe or in Botswana. The inmate has to agree. We are not going to force anyone to say, since we have got an agreement, you go back home. No.
The decision to swap prisoners is meant to, among others, decongest prisons. A UN group on arbitrary detention condemned the state of prisons in Botswana, where some inmates reportedly sleep on the floor. Minister Musi says the country is committed to rectifying the situation by building more incarceration centers.
We are doing everything we can by trying to make sure that we can build more prisons. But, you know, everything is determined by budgets and what is most important for the country at that point in time. You know, we're just coming from a COVID situation where we had to put in all of our budgets into our COVID protection. But we will be looking at all these things. We will look at what they have advised, and we will address each point by point to ensure that we remain compliant to them.
Zimbabwe is also battling crowded prisons, with 19,000 inmates in facilities built to hold 17,000 people. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokwilia Baro, and our engineer, Audrius Rigas, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.